my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron. You are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 486, be broadcast on Wednesday, June 10th on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She's off doing things. So anyway, if you feel free to comment, you can certainly do that and I might be able to respond. Otherwise, if you need to reach me, it's bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. Bicycle Talk's a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can leave a comment right down here below, or you can drop me an email. Bicycle Talk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, Spotify, iTunes, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. Of course, we've always got a rant, right? It's the same old rant. It keeps going on and on. It's the gas price thing, and why aren't you out riding your bicycle right now? Because you know what? If you give them money, they're just going to keep charging you more, and they're going to keep taking more of your money. But anyway, gas prices have come down. They're still ridiculous. It's still well over $4 a gallon. It's still not very effective or efficient to be driving around in a motorized vehicle, but it's far more efficient and effective to be driving around on your bicycle. And I tell people that when they ride their bikes as far as commuting, you don't look at it as riding your bike. You actually look at it as driving your bike, because that's the way you stay alive in traffic. And that's another story all in itself. But anyway, so it just keeps like kind of hovering around there. And you know it's only going to get worse. It's only going to go up and up and up because the vacation season is coming. Summer's here. There's additives in the gasoline. It makes it more expensive. I don't worry about any of that when I ride my bike. It's great. Let's talk a little more ranting here. If you've been following the bicycle racing scene, the professional bicycle racing scene, there's this thing out there called P-Gate. You know what P-Gate is? Yeah. UCI rule 2.12.006. Riders are fined typically between 50 to 200 Swiss francs for urinating in public in a manner that damages the image of the sport. And there's been a lot of P-Gate going on right now, and it went on during the Giro, the men's Giro, and now it went on also during the women's Giro. And what's happening here is, you know, you ride a bike and you're in a 4 to 6 hour race, and you got a lot of liquid inside of you, and sometimes you just gotta let it go. So how do you let it go? Well, on a bike rolling relief, skilled riders will hold their speed coaster pedal with one hand, and then a teammate will kind of, you know, give him a little push on the backside to get him down the road. Have I stepped over a line here as far as what I'm talking about today? Oh, well, you had to know this is how it works. So, the unofficial peloton break. Okay, this is when you have a calmer moment and a group of riders all pulls off on the side of the road. It's really funny because I've seen many videos of this over the years. And everybody just, they all stop at the same place. They're out in the middle of the country somewhere alongside a road. And they just let it go. And there you go. So obviously this is a much easier thing to do for males than it is for females, as we have seen. So the next thing that is done is they urinate in a bottle and they ride They urinate into empty bottles known as bidons, and the UCI and race organizers have severely cracked down on this, warning riders that discarding pee-filled bottles is strictly prohibited because fans often grab the discarded bottles as souvenirs. Bike racing fans, don't drink that bottle. Because women's gear and anatomical differences make roadside stops more time-consuming, the UCI and organizers face ongoing debates over whether to formalize designated nature break zones to avoid penalizing riders caught mid-race. And pee problems, of course, trickled into the women's Giro d'Italia. By the way, the women's Giro d'Italia is over, and it was a 9-day race, and it was exciting and kind of fun to watch. If you didn't see it, you can watch episodes on YouTube, and definitely worth looking at. So the UCI commissioners have cracked down on peeing in public and taking illegal toes just days after the weight limit controversy in the race on the women's race. Yeah, somebody was riding a bike that was 20 grams. Get out your scales on this one. 20 grams too light, and she got penalized for it. 20 grams? Are you kidding me? Maybe she should have put some more water in her bottle. Crazy, huh? So anyway, these things happen in the crazy, wild, and chaotic world of bicycle racing. And I won't rant on them any longer at this time. So on a positive side, the Mansfield Elementary School fourth grade program is now over. We finished the last 2 days of last week, and we had some on the bike riding time, and then some other things that we're showing kids how to do, like changing a flat tire or checking over a bike just before they get to go. And we rigged up a bike that had all sorts of problems. You know, the quick releases were off, and the chain had fallen off, and you know, different things. And we stuck a stick into the rear gears, and you know, let them figure out what they would do to resolve the problem. So it's all done. It finished. Here's an interesting stat, and I don't know if I talked about this last week or not, but there were, of all of the kids, all the fourth graders in the town of Mansfield, there were 30 of them that had never ridden a bicycle before. Can you imagine that? I mean, the bicycle has just been such an incredibly important part of my life. I grew up on a bicycle. I lived on my bicycle as a kid. And then, you know, even when I got to the point where I got my driver's license, I had already gone out and bought my first 10-speed bike. And I was riding it on a regular basis, even after I got my car. And I had a car. I had access to a car because my dad was an automobile mechanic. We owned a garage. And, you know, there was always a car and there was always plenty of gasoline available. So it wasn't really a big deal. But I liked to ride my bike. I preferred to ride my bike. And it was kind of nice. And my dad would also, before I got my driver's license, my dad was, I was always on call with my dad. So if it got really busy at the gas station, there'd be a phone call at the home and I would be beckoned over to the gas station to help dad with whatever he had to have help with, because he was the only mechanic on duty. And, you know, we sold gas and we checked oil and washed windshields and did all that kind of stuff. So anyway, I grew up in a car world, but I still loved my bicycle more than anything else. So anyway, that's I just find it hard to believe that 30 kids out of this fourth grade class at the town of Mansfield never had ridden a bike before. But we taught them how. We taught them how to ride the bike. We taught them how to fix the bike. There were some unsteady folks there. There were definitely some unsteady kids. And we had some special bikes rigged up so that if they were really, really having a hard time with it, we could help them out. You know, took the pedals off the bikes, let them use it as a balance bike so they get used to the feel of it and all. And by the end of the program, everybody could ride a bike, and everybody knew everything there was about cycling. If you are interested in finding out more about this program, we offer it in Mansfield. The South Windsor offers it in South Windsor. I think there's something going on over in Avon and Simsbury now, too, but I'm not 100% sure on that. So there are other towns that are offering these programs. What a great program. Think about it. You're teaching kids that are about to enter middle school, so they're still far away from a driver's license, the rules of the road, and what to expect when you're out there, and how to handle it when you are out there, and to do it right. I think it's a great idea. I think it's a wonderful program, and a big tip of the cycling cap to the Bike Mansfield group that is involved with putting this together. And a big thank you to all the volunteers that showed up and helped out Lon this year with the program. So anyway, other thing on a positive side, I'm going to keep reminding people that the Windham Area Interfaith Ministry in Willimantic is always looking for used bicycles. Used bicycles that are in reasonably good condition that can be fixed up so that they can then pass them on to their program and help people out who are in need of good, solid transportation. So that's what I got on a positive side at this time, but I'm sure we'll find more. Mechanical Minute and bike tips. Okay. Yeah, I'm still working on the e-bike. I'm real close. I'm going to figure it out. I hope to be able to give you a completely positive report by next week about my e-bike ventures, because I've got a couple of different projects going right now, both a hub drive and also a mid-drive motor system. So I'll let you know. We're getting there. In the meantime, I'm just chugging my regular old bicycle up to the community center in the mornings whenever I can, and, you know, climbing up the massive amount of hills that I have to deal with in front of me. It's a 7.5 mile ride with 100 feet per mile of climbing. Ooh, that hurts. Average around here is about 65 feet per mile. So, you know, that's that. And what else do I have here? Oh, I also made mention here of Unbound. So Unbound is a gravel ride. And I know, where does this fall into Mechanical Minute and bike tips? Well, we'll get there. I've been talking about 32-inch wheels for a while, because 32-inch wheels are kind of a big deal in the bike world, or a seemingly big deal in the bike world right now. I'm not going to say they really are. But anyway, the reports are back from Unbound, and it appears that there were more people on 700C wheels than there were on 32-inch wheels, and that there was a winner of a race in the Unbound race. This is a big race out in Kansas, by the way. It's huge. Most people are on 700C wheels still. Cheers to 700C wheels. It's the same old wheel that I've been riding for most of my life. And whether it be on the road or off the road, cyclocross bike and or road bike, even riding with people on mountain bikes, I was usually on 700C wheels. And then they came out with 29ers, which really are, guess what, folks? 700C wheels. So anyway, 32-inch wheels are, they were presented, and there's not many out there. So I'm sure that's part of why it wasn't as big a deal. And the other thing about 32-inch wheels, of course, is if you're not very tall, they're just not going to work for you, because you're not going to be able to stand over the bike. But anyway, that's that. I'm not going to get heavily into that. Unless I run into extra time today to talk about it. Let's get into the show here today. Oh, no, wait a minute. I had one more thing I wanted to talk about. So someone asked me the other day, so I see that you stand up a lot when you're climbing. Yeah, I like to stand. I feel more comfortable sometimes when I stand. And there's a science behind standing and sitting on a bicycle if you're on a road bike. Efficiency, power, and And so I want to talk a little bit about that today because this is Ron's cycling tip time. So it seems like most people are sitting when they're climbing. But then you start watching all this bicycle racing that I watch and you go, wow, look at these guys are out of saddle. And, you know, you get out of the saddle and they get into a rhythm and a rock. And I'm pretty comfortable there. I've been comfortable there for a long time. But I will say it's going to require a little bit more effort if you are going to stand up on your bike when you're climbing a hill. Think about it. If you're standing up, you will find yourself working your upper body a little bit more, so therefore you're working more muscle groups. What about toe jam? Yeah, I'm not going there. I'm getting comments here. Hi, Chris. Hi, Chris and hi, Chris. We got two Chris's watching today. So anyway, from a biomechanical standpoint, as far as efficiency goes in climbing, sitting is the best way to do it. You're more efficient. You can pull through the bottom of the pedal stroke, maybe a little bit better, a little smoother. Although, if you're very accomplished at climbing out of the saddle, you can do the same thing out of the saddle. What you will find when you get out of the saddle is it may affect your RPMs, your ability to spin. And so that's why some people have a, they just don't like to do it because they can't hold their cadence real well. And then the other thing is you mostly see, and this is kind of a general statement for me to make, but you mostly see the riders, the small riders that are out of the saddle and the big riders that remain in the saddle. Think about it. If you've got a lot of extra body weight, then you're going to be carrying that more when you get out of the saddle. So it will have an effect there. From a biomechanical standpoint, sitting allows smoother engagement of your glutes, your quads, and your hamstrings. Those are your three large muscle groups that maintain your rhythmic pedaling for extended periods of time. And aerodynamically, sitting, especially in a low relaxed posture, reduces frontal surface area, making it easier to cut through the wind. Nothing worse than riding uphill into the wind. Tell me there's nothing. Tell me what's worse than that. It can be. Most of the time, though, when we're riding uphill, we don't usually deal with the headwind as much. I tend to stick to the hills when I'm riding my bike to avoid the winds, because when you get out on the big main roads where there's, you know, where there's less trees that are protecting you from the wind, it gets a little windier out there. So I like to sneak away and hide in the woods and deal with the hills. So studies have shown that seated cycling consumes 8 to 15% less oxygen at the same power output compared to standing. So let's say you're putting out 200 watts of power and you're sitting down, you're going to work 8 to 15%. You're going to consume 8 to 15% less oxygen. Okay, makes sense. It makes it ideal for endurance riding, long climbs at steady power, flat cruising, road cruising, training zones 2 to 3 if you're trying to watch your heart rate zones, and of course long distance events where you want to last longer. In short, your sitting is your fuel saving mode. So that's when you're doing that. Standing, high power, high cost. So standing on the pedals shifts your body weight from the saddle to the pedals and the handlebars. This instantly increases your leverage, allows you to produce more torque per stroke. Cyclists instinctively stand when they need explosive power because the legs can push harder when the body can sway side to side. Standing is excellent for sprinting, for attacking on climbs, for surging out of corners, for passing other riders, for tackling steep grades above 10%. We have a lot of those out here. Matter of fact, when I ride at the community center, I often see over 10% when I'm trying to get up to the community center in the morning. So, you know, guess what? I spent some time out of the saddle because of that. Because it's, to me, it's easier. I'm much more accustomed to being out of the saddle on hills, and I'm more accomplished with it because I've been doing it for a long time. But everything is, it all depends on where you're at. So remember, terrain dictates technique. Okay, so the steeper the terrain gets, you're going to have to possibly get out of the saddle for a little bit and then settle back in. Long climbs require more pacing. So if you're on a long, long climb, you may want to stay seated for a longer time. If you're riding into a headwind, you definitely want to stay seated because you need to get down and be aerodynamic. Flat road, speed, maintenance, you're down, you're sitting. Conserving energy on group rides. Yeah, this is all what you use sitting for. And aerodynamic efficiency, obviously. Standing is for your short explosive efforts. You're climbing in sections of above 8 to 10%, which is pretty much everywhere around here. Rolling terrain that requires momentum. I'll often see a roll in a hill, like a bop, a little pop up ahead, as I like to call them, short poppers. And some people curse at me when I say that. It's just a short popper, that's all. But if I can get out of the saddle and jam out maybe 15 or 20 strokes out of the saddle, I can keep my speed up and roll over that better. And, the best riders, of course, combine both strategically. So that's really what you're looking for. So I've got more to this. I know I've got more to this here somewhere. Yeah. Trainer Road. Shout out to the folks over at Trainer Road. Like those guys. They've got lots of great techniques and information. And they have a little section here about how to improve your riding out of the saddle. And it comes down to, do I need practice standing? Absolutely. It is not something that you can do without being able to hold your body in the proper position on the bike. When you are standing and climbing at your most efficient level, and of course, standing is not an efficient thing, you will find yourself in a really nice rhythm. And as a friend of mine that came alongside of me one day, as she was driving her car around me, she rolled down her window on the passenger side and she said, "You have to show me how to do that." And I said, "How to do what?" She goes, "You look like you're dancing on your bike when you climb hills." And I said, "Well, I feel like I'm suffering, but I'm glad it looks good. But, you get a technique and you get a flow and you become, I say this all the time, you become one with your bike." And so riding and standing on the bike, you really do have to practice. Here's a big no-no that a lot of people do. And that is that they go to stand and get off the saddle and they throw their bike backwards. So you have to be if you're on a group ride, you have to be extremely aware of people who know how to do it and people who do not. If you know how to do it, you're in a gear which has a substantial amount of pressure on it, and you gently elevate yourself off the saddle and then come forward. And as you do that, you'll remain with the same power on the pedals and the bike won't go back at all. It just won't. And it takes practice, and that's why practice is a good thing. So the question is, do I need practice standing? Yes, absolutely. Good times to stand. Okay, obviously it's going to be inherently less efficient than sitting, but it's also more powerful. So if you're at a place on a hill, and this happens often around here, where I'll be climbing at 6% and then all of a sudden it goes to 12%, I'm going to get out of the saddle and I'm going to stand to get over that 12%, and then I'm going to sit back into my saddle when it mellows out a little bit and maybe down to a 6% or a 4% climb. So there are times that works well. And you also kind of have to know what you're dealing with up ahead. And as I tell people, you have to read the road. And reading the road is simply knowing that, okay, I know that this hill lasts this long, but there's one little area that is particularly difficult, and that's maybe when you hop out of the saddle. But you got to know the road. If you don't know the road, you may be in for big surprises, and it may cost you. So you got to be a little bit careful about that. What do they say? A few times where you should stay in the, when you do a ramp test, the workout instructions will tell you to remain in the saddle for the entire assessment. This is if you're being trained. It's hard to stay in the saddle for an extended period of time on a long climb. But at the same time, if you have the gearing for it, and look at all the great new gearing that we have on the bikes right now, if you have the gearing for it, you can pretty much ride up and over anything while seated. So the big thing is, if you want to get better at standing, you got to practice. And you have to know when and when not to stand. And that is an acquired skill. And it's not something that everybody knows how to do. And once again, if you practice, you'll get to learn a little bit more about your body and a little bit more about how you can react to certain terrains. I always have a ride that I do where it's a big downhill, but there's kind of a flat and slightly uphill section halfway through it, and then it goes back down again. It's very close to my house. It's on a road in Chaplin called Palmer Road. And so right there where it levels out, I'm trying to keep my speed up because I want to make sure I still have a lot of speed to go down the next part of the downhill. So that is where I will get out of the saddle and I'll jam it out. And usually, like I said, 20 or 30 pedal strokes, and then I'm seated back in the saddle. It's just enough to give you that extra little kick of power that you need. So, you know, it's up to you. Are you a stander or are you a sitter? How do you like to climb your hills? I'm finding I'm sitting more than I used to. I am not out of the saddle as much as I used to be. And so, you know, it's an age acquired thing. It happens. We get older, we get a little slower. So, you know, this is what it is. That's what can I say? So anyway, what else do we have here? Oh God. Yeah. So I'll touch base a little bit about this, the pee problem. First of all, I have absolutely no idea how women are filling water bottles with pee, because they were, and they must have some special way of doing that, which I am completely unaware of, because we all have different equipment. So it definitely I know there are things that are out there for athletes, because I've been around athletes my whole life. I've been around a lot of women athletes my whole life, and there are ways of making it happen if you need to. I spent a number of years chasing around flat water canoe racers, and these folks sit in the boat for 7 hours, 6 hours at a time. And they drink an enormous amount of liquid to be able to stay hydrated, especially if you're sitting on the water and the sun is pouring down on you. So they obviously need to deal with this. And they just do it in the boat. It's not really pleasant, but that's what they do.
I was a road support vehicle for the state road race a number of years ago. And I had picked up my ex-wife, Kathy, and she decided she wanted to do a lap in the van as we were chasing around. We were the wheel van, and we had all the spare wheels and all. And she sees a couple of guys slipping off the back, and she goes, oh, it looks like they probably need a wheel. And I said, no, they don't need a wheel. And she goes, oh, no, you how do you know? And I said, well, they're not raising their hand. And she said, well, what was that? And I explained, you know, right hand, rear tire, left hand, front tire. That's the code. That's the way it works. And there were no hands going up. And then pretty soon there was one rider with the other rider, and he was pushing him. The other guy was relieving himself, taking what they call a nature break off the back of the pack. And she went, "Oh my God, they're not doing." I said, "Yeah, they're doing that. That's what you do sometimes." So anyway, but the big thing that the UCI is all fussed up about is the fact that they're urinating in bottles and then throwing them off to the side, and they don't think that's a really good look for the sport. But you know, it's what are we going to do about this? So it appears that maybe the UCI is looking at, with the women's fields especially, having designated zones where they can get off their bikes and use a porta potty, and then everybody resumes racing afterwards. Who knows? Seems like you'd have to have a lot of porta potties for that. But anyway, that's what we're looking at. So we'll see what happens. It seems silly to me, but it's become a big talked item, and it just doesn't seem right at all. And anyway, we move on. Demi Vollering pulled off a stunning move on the final stage of the Giro d'Italia women's race on Sunday, dropping race leader Anna van der Breggen on the final climb of the race, bridging across to a dangerous break on a dangerous breakaway move, and then driving the pace to the end. She's the women's field is very interesting. It's very strong. There's also some young riders coming in. It's really entertaining, and the hills that they're going over are like classic Giro, 14% nasty climbs, you know. And anyway, it's fun to watch. Fun to watch if you're into bike racing. I'm into bike racing. I love to watch it. But there's a lot more tactics being... I see a lot more tactics. I see a lot more of the trying to get away solo breakaways, maybe a couple of people away in a breakaway. Less of the, we're going to wait until the very end and then just sprint for it, and which is something that I was always critical about with the women's races, because it seemed like that was kind of a regular thing. But you know, things are starting to pick up. Women's sports are hot right now, man. There's some really, really cool stuff going on. And if you haven't seen Demi Vollering on a bike, you definitely need to check her out. She's very, very good at what she does, and so are all the others. They're all good. You know, there's some great, great women racers out there. Anyway, that is beyond us, because that finished on Sunday. And then, you know, there was some talk, of course, with there's this race called Unbound, which is in the, in Kansas. And it's become one of the most competitive U.S. cycling events I've ever seen, and it's gravel riding up to 200 miles, and just crazy stuff, crazy, crazy, crazy stuff. This year they had lots of mud, they had big crashes, just crazy stuff going on, but they also had 32-inch wheels. Conclusion, we're not ready for 32-inch wheels yet. We're going to push on beyond that, because I got other things I can talk about. This Build America 250 Act, which is going on right now, and it's really what the public wants. You know, it really is. You look at 2/3 of Americans over the age of 50 say public transport is important to them, and 3/4 support transit-oriented development, according to an AARP poll. This is a big deal with cyclists, with pedestrians, and there's so much that we need to bury into our infrastructure that we have just not paid attention to. Let's face it, folks, gasoline-powered vehicles are coming to an end very soon. They're either going to come to an end because of electric vehicles, or they're going to come to an end because they just are polluting the daylights out of our environment and our air, and it's just not a good idea. And I'm just hoping that somewhere along the line we get enough infrastructure repair so that we can get good bike lanes, good protected bike lanes. That's all I ask for. I don't ask for much more. I'm going to ride on the road for the most part, but a protected bike lane, if I'm in a very busy urban area, is certainly something that I will take advantage of. I'll probably have to slow it down a little bit, but that's okay. It's all right. But anyway, it's just there's a lot of good things going on. Ethiopia's air is getting cleaner since it instituted the world's first ban on imported gas and diesel-powered cars and started buying electric buses. Surprise! You know, it's just really, there's just so many good things we could be doing, but we are not. So in addition to that, there was a rolling protest that helped win some of the best provisions in the new infrastructure bill. And that's a whole bunch of people getting on bikes, some people pulling flags, you know, getting themselves out there. Lots of people with helmets on. There were big protests in a lot of the big cities, in Chicago and in New York and San Francisco and LA. And it's, you know, really very, very impressive when you see that number of cyclists out, you know, telling Congress what we want, telling us what we're looking for. There's a tremendous bipartisan support in the country for making our roadways far more pedestrian and cyclist friendly. And that's a statement from Representative Jamie Raskin, from a Democrat from Maryland, who introduced the legislation in an interview with Streets Blog, when I'm getting this off of Streets Blog. And this is especially true at a time of soaring gasoline prices. The pressure has been on for us to make sure that our tax dollars go to help people who are using every conceivable kind of transportation, including walking and cycling. You know, it might sound wonky, but the measures that were outlined in the Langerkamp Act, I don't know if you remember slain cyclist Sarah Langerkamp. She was down in D.C. and very, very, she was a mother, a diplomat, and a cycling advocate for whom the bill is named. And it's this ride is known as the Ride for Your Life. And there are rolling protests that have flooded D.C. streets with thousands of cyclists who turned out to demonstrate their support for Langerkamp's namesake law and other measures to end traffic violence. Her husband, by the way, I believe is the one who got on the bandwagon on this after she was killed. They're both cyclists. They were both, you know, very strong cycling advocates. So anyway, you know, it's time. It's time. It's way past time. I won't say it's just time now. It's way past time. We've been fighting for this for a long time, and now it's time to really, really take a look. Magnus White Cycling Safety Act gained significant momentum after the Ride for Magnus White. Ride for Your Life turned out more than 4,300 cyclists across 48 states. The provisions of that bill would require new cars to carry automatic braking systems capable of detecting cyclists, pedestrians, and also appears in the current draft of the Build America 2250. We're getting there. We're actually getting there. Things are definitely moving in the right direction. This encourages me. I love seeing this and love seeing the positive response that we get. Hey, you got something funny here. 10 common anti-bike myths busted with facts every cyclist should know. Are you ready? Hang on tight. No one uses bike lanes. Not true. The bike lanes, when they open, they start out, there's a few people on them, and then all of a sudden the growth goes 200% up this year, another 150% the next year, 500% the following year. It's bike lanes are huge. They are absolutely huge. The Penn Avenue in Pittsburgh, over 400 daily trips, sometimes spiking past 3,700 in a single day, right? This is all good stuff. Toronto, Minneapolis, Copenhagen obviously is a no-brainer. They've been riding bikes forever. And the next myth, bike lanes take up too much space and make streets dangerous. Absolutely wrong, 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 wrong. Bike lanes make the roads narrower. When the roads get narrower, guess what happens? The roads get safer, not more dangerous. So a multi-city study found that protected, physically separated bike lanes are dramatically improved road safety, reducing deaths by about 44% and serious injuries by 50%, while painted shared lanes offer little to no safety benefit, otherwise known as the toilet paper of bicycle safety. Share the road. Oh, don't get me started. Cyclists don't pay for roads. Well, that's not true, and we now know that. We've certainly beaten that dead horse hard enough here on this show, and we do know that the money that goes to the roads doesn't come from gasoline tax, it comes from federal taxes. And if you're a bicyclist and you are riding your bike back and forth to work and you're paying money into the federal government, guess what? You're actually being you're at a disadvantage because you're paying for the roads that people are driving their cars on. Now, you're also paying for the roads that you're riding your bike on, so we can't be completely against that sort of thing. But cyclists never follow the rules. That turned into a no-brainer. Why don't they just ride on sidewalks or trails? Probably because it's not legal in most states. Bike lanes hurt small businesses by removing parking. No way. One parallel parking space, you can put 10 bicycles in. That's 10 customers versus the one customer who drove in the gigantic SUV and took up that space. Don't even get me going. Helmets should be mandatory. And you know what? They do reduce injuries. I suppose they should be mandatory, but not everybody can afford a helmet, and especially folks that are riding their bicycles for transportation. I won't go anywhere without my helmet. There's no question about it. I don't trust cars, and therefore I wear my helmet. But I can afford a helmet, but I know folks that are barely getting by that are riding bicycles and they can't afford a helmet. And if you see one of those people and you see them out every single day, buy them a helmet. Offer to buy them a helmet. You know, say, hey, you know, I'm really concerned. I see you out riding your bicycle every day, and I'm thinking that, you know, I would like to take you down to the local bike shop, and we're going to buy you a helmet and then send you on your way. And, you know, I just want to make sure you keep doing what you're doing because I'm so impressed because I see you out here every day. It's all good. Too cold, too rainy, too chilly, too whatever, you know, those are all old excuses. You can buy all sorts of wonderful equipment now. And we can't all be expected to bike. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But what if we did start riding more? What if more of us started riding and all of a sudden the fitness level changes and less people have to have special health care because of it and more people can get around? You know, bikes are allies, not adversaries. Let's move on to another subject here. What else do I have here on my list? Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I don't see if I got time for this or not. This is kind of cool. So I've got a fascination towards cargo bicycles because cargo bicycles are becoming they just make sense. You know, I see these cargo bikes that moms have a couple of kids in or dads have a couple of kids in, but they also have all their groceries in there. Some of them have little covers over the top. It's just fascinating to me. The explosion of the cargo bike, especially when you get into the big cities. And, you know, my son's wife works at a school and she said, you can see the moms, you know, riding their bicycles up and dropping the kids off at the school. She said it's becoming more and more common. And that's cool. That's totally cool. So, yeah, cargo bikes are cool. But if you want to get really, really, really cool on a cargo bike, Chinelli makes a super cargo. And yeah, it's got, it says here, when a cargo bike gets a racing soul, isn't that kind of cool? So anyway, yeah, it's Chinelli. If you know anything about Chinelli, Chino Chinelli made bicycles, he made handlebars and stems and all sorts of things. He made the bike that Eddie Merckx set the record for the mile on. Chino Chinelli. But anyway, so now Chinelli is making something called the Omnium, which is a supercargo bike. Why? Because it looks like a laser going down the road. It's wicked cool. It's got a very well extended front wheel. It sits way out there in front, and it's you know, that's where you would put like a rack on the front of it. So it distributes the weight in a different way. And they said that the big thing about the Chinelli bike, the Omnium, is that it rides more like a real bicycle instead of this big clunky cargo bike. So it's becoming a big hit with the messenger crowd, because they can put a lot of stuff on it and they can do DoorDash deliveries and all the other nice things that you do when you're, you know, in that frame of work. And they get to also just really appreciate and have fun with it. I think it's a cool looking thing. I would strongly urge you to Google this and check it out and see what it looks like, because it's just so trick looking. It's very, very cool. And maybe I'll actually try to post a picture onto on the website, so or on the Facebook page, so you can see what the cargo bike is. This cargo bike is all about. It's cool. That's all I can say. It is so, so cool. So we got a little bit of time left, and I got a little bit of thing. I got some things I need to talk about. Everybody's talking about Jonas Vingegaard since the Giro d'Italia. And oh my God, what is he doing? You know, he won 5 stages in the Giro, but you know, if you looked, he didn't look fatigued at all. And so there's a question as to whether he was using the Giro for training and has a plan or not. And the answer is yes, there is a plan. And he obviously is going to be going up against Tadej Pogačar. Tadej Pogačar is probably one of the biggest deals out there, but there's some other big deals out there now too. And we've got to take a look at who some of those riders are that he's going to be up against. So the first thing I went and I looked at 4 weeks to go and what the favorites are doing now to prepare. We've got Pogačar, we've got Vingegaard, we've got Sesas, and we've got Evenepoel. Those are probably the 4 top riders that we're going to be paying attention to. Sesas, you say, who's that? Yeah, he's the new youngster. Keep your eyes on him. He's a Frenchman, and he is 19 years old, and he is strong as a bull and very, very fast. So we're going to keep our eyes on him. Now, who's got the teams that can win? Well, the UAE has got Tadej Pogačar and that team. And of course, Vingegaard has Visma, and Remco Evenepoel is also in the play. So there's a lot of interesting players. I think it is going to be an interesting Tour de France this year. Paul Sesas, he's 19 years old. Again, he doesn't have the huge team. He's on the Decathlon team, but, you know, so he may not have as many teammates behind him to help him out. And when you're playing games against the UAE guys and against the Visma guys, you got to have a team. It's really, really important. So What's Sasek doing right now? Turn on your TV. You might see Sasek's doing everything right now. He is the only one of the big four to take on the traditional route to the Grand Départ by making this week's Critérium de Dauphiné. So there's where he is. He's racing in the Dauphiné right now. After the Dauphiné, he's going to hit one last block of altitude training in the Alps, and off he goes. So we're going to watch him. I think he's going to make it interesting. Jonas, 29 years old, just won 5 stages of the Giro d'Italia. It's pretty outstanding. And he would like to win the Tour de France also. That will put him dead even with Tadej Pogačar, who has done the same thing. And he really has the confidence to do it. They say that he is as fit as he has ever been in his life. And he's, you know, I did a little check on him because, you know, I'm always checking VO2 max on these guys because they spin so fast on these really steep climbs. They've got the little gears, but they're just moving their legs around. Well, that takes oxygen, man. That takes a lot of oxygen. So I figured, well, I'll check and see what Tadej Pogačar's VO2 is. And his VO2 is 96. Jonas Vingegaard is 97. That's why these guys are so good. That's why they are such unbelievable alpine climbers. And it's just really it's fascinating to watch. It's just fascinating. So it's a month away. You know, we're getting close. 4th of July is when it starts. And you know, Vingegaard spent his last week at home framing his pink jersey and spending time with his family. And he's expected to head to Tignes any day now, where he'll plow through one last block of altitude training. He'll be joined by the key Tour de France henchmen like Matteo Jorgensen, Wout van Aert, next week after they finish the Dauphiné. So Wout van Aert and Matteo Jorgensen are in the Dauphiné right now, so they're just kind of tuning their bodies up. Sepp Kuss is recovering from his Giro and is planning on being in there with him. The team is stacked. It's really stacked. It looks really, really interesting to me. And then, of course, we have Tadej Pogačar, 27 years old. And he is just, he won so many classics this year. He is extremely fit. He has been, so what he's doing now, he's been on top of Sierra Nevada for the past 3 weeks, and he's expecting to return to sea level any day now. The Super Slovenian has been sharing reels of himself cranking high altitude kilometers on a time trial bike and jabbing around with teammate Isaac Del Toro. See, he's got Isaac Del Toro also. There's just really good stuff coming up. His next race is going to be Tour de Suisse, and we'll see what happens there. He's just such a phenomenal athlete. Remco Evenepoel, he's in the mix there too. I'm going to run out of time here in a minute. His last race was the Liège, Bastion Liège, late April. Best of the rest at a race that he won twice. Seemed like a downer finale to his roller coaster start with Red Bull. What he's doing now, he's just completed a block of altitude training on Sierra Nevada. And he's radically redesigned his road to the Tour. Now he's back home and enjoying a little sofa time before he makes the push towards the Tour's big start. So he's definitely in there. Evenepoel, he's definitely a contender. It's just really going to be an interesting mix of riders. What's also interesting is the teams that are with these guys. There's some just incredibly, incredibly strong riding teams that are going into this year's Tour de France. And I just can't wait. I can't wait. I'm getting all excited about it already. It's going to be a great year for the Tour. It was a great year for the Giro, although some people felt the Giro was boring because it was just, you know, just one rider doing outstanding things. And I just don't see it that way. I don't see it that way at all. But we'll, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. This is why we watch bike racing. And, or it's at least why I watch bike racing. And, you know, we should produce some really, really fun competitive races that will be very, very enjoyable. Let's see. So this basically is it. Visa Melissa, the list of riders by team. Jonas Vingegaard has Wout van Aert, Matteo Jorgensen, Bruno Armoral, Sepp Kuss, Victor Campagnards, always been a strong rider, Ben Tulit, and Eduardo Affini. Eduardo Affini is a sprint and time trial specialist. He's going to be super important to them on the flat stages to keep pace. He was a fairly new sign-in on the team, so the Movistar team is going to be there. The UAE Emirates, Tadej Pogačar, Isaac Del Toro, Tim Wellens, Mark Soleil, Brandon McNulty, Adam Yates. I mean, stacked team. And so, you know, we're going to see some good competitive racing. I can't wait. It should be good. And, of course, we still got, you know, players out there like Juan Ayuso, you know, who's a very, very good strong cyclist. And we've got Paul Seixas, who is a very strong cyclist. I just think that it could be an anything goes here. We'll see. We'll see. When you got, you know, when you got a team with Remco Evenepoel and Jai Hindley is on the team, who is an outstanding cyclist and had a very good Giro this year. I think we got some good stuff going on here. Oh man, Chris, not riding at all is worse. Oh yeah, okay, gotcha. So anyway, this is it. I am going to come to conclusion here because we are reaching the end of the show and it is time to go. So I'm going to finish this off with very, very simply, events coming up. It's Tour de France. That seems to be the big event coming up. There's, you know, some local stuff going on here too, but I don't have much more to talk about right now at this time. I have given my okay yay to the Farm to Fork Fondo folks, and I will be in Vermont next month. And so, yeah, here we go. Here we go. Fun times. So give us your opinion. How are you doing on that? How are you doing on that? I'm riding my bike instead of driving my car. I want to hear about it. Send me a note. Let me hear what you have to say. Remember, bicycling's freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling's an easier and safer option for more people because when more people bike, people are happier, they're healthier, our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet's greener. What's not to like? I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. You got to get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic and dangerous roads and the price of gas and lack of places to safely ride and do your part. Hey, take that pedal and run challenge. Park the car one day. Ride the bike instead. You will surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding your bicycle or you're driving a car, please be safe and please be kind. Remember that every person you pass when you're driving your car down the road has someone waiting for them at home. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Storch, who's off doing other things. And remember that you can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you need to reach me, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. it really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride.